Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, your favorite podcast among all the other podcasts. We are back. We are together. We are in the same building. The giant run of promos and war zones and 4th of July regalia has finally come to a close. And here we sit. Good to see you, Paul.
Good to see you, Tom.
It's been quite a journey for both of us. We have a lot to talk about. Paul is back from his USO tour of entertaining the troops. I am back from my book tour, entertaining the readers. Bella's back. Bella was away for 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah?
Bella was on a farm, and she was at some other guy's house. Bowser has a new family.
Oh, yeah?
The cat escaped while we were away, and a new family was feeding him and living with him and sending pictures of this mysterious cat. The kids fell in love with it. His name is Kit Kat when he's over there. So it's been a crazy, crazy, crazy couple of months. Thank you for our patience. We took last week off. But now we're back in full swing. We still have a bunch of tour dates coming up. It is not really over. It never really is. I will be at the Montreal Comedy Festival. I'm coming up to Beverly, Massachusetts and New Hampshire next week. Bunch of dates in August. Go to tompapa.com and look up all those tour dates. The great Paul Morrissey at Paul has a website.com. Make sure you check out his new special that is streaming right now. And
your book.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, we'll get to the book. We'll get to the book. The book is selling like hotcakes. Everybody thinks it's a great summer read. And that's very exciting. We're still bringing the book around. We're still doing a couple events for that. And the bread show. We've got announcements about that coming out on Labor Day. We're going to be recording with a special guest next week. But I was just spacing on something. There was something else. Oh, and make sure you subscribe. As you know, Come to Papa is commercial free, and our subscribers help support the show. You can go to patreon.com. That is patreon.com/comeTopapa, and you can pledge your support for the Come to Papa show and get additional content, which includes an additional podcast and more stuff that Paul posts online and all those nice treats. And it is, as long as we can keep advertisers away, I think it's pretty worth it.
Yeah, two episodes a week. We had a bunch of people in Phoenix that were listeners, so it's always good to hear from everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this tour has been a lot of fun. Ran into a lot of people. People were coming up asking about the great Bella. They have a dog named Bella. There were people that were coming up and asking where the hell you were in Washington, D.C. Those shows were great. But I guess let's start with the book tour. It was great, and I thank you all for your support. Thank you for coming out. If you haven't bought a book yet, you should, because we want to keep it going. Your Dad Stole My Rake, available on Amazon. If you have bought a book, and you know, we have thousands of listeners to this podcast, and I only have 23 reviews on Amazon. I know it's a pain in the ass, but go on Amazon and just say how much you liked it. All 5-star reviews. People love it, which is an amazing thing. It's been so exciting and gratifying that people actually are enjoying the book, and we're in our third printing of the book, which is really great. You know, when you do a book, they don't think you're going to sell anything at first. Yeah. So they hedge their bets and they only print some. And then we ran out. We literally watched on Amazon. It was down to like 2 books, and then it was sold out for a bit. And I think it probably hurts our momentum a little bit, but now we're back in stock. We've got three printings worth of books out there.
And the audiobook is up, too, for the
audiobook,
Audible
number
people.
One new release in parent and family humor.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all been a positive, super positive experience. The best part has been going out after the shows, signing the books, meeting all the people from the podcast, meeting all the people from fans of the stand-up, and that was really fun, I have to say. You know, a lot of times we do these shows and we're doing, you know, two shows a night, an hour and something, you know, an hour and a half of show each night, each show, and then you're exhausted and got to gear up for the next one as the people are dumping out and coming in.
Right.
So usually we just lay on the ground in the green room and try and eat some nachos before the next show. This made us go out in between the shows and got to see all the people, met all these great people in Portland, all these amazing people in D.C., great, great people in Phoenix and Salt Lake City. They really came out in force. We sold that place out like immediately.
Yeah.
And it really makes you realize we've got to come to these places more often, because there's been some markets like Phoenix and Portland where we don't get to go that often.
Yes.
And there's other places that are Oklahoma and Boise and all these other places. Florida keeps begging for us to come back. So the tour marches on. I have to say, we've been talking about this book for a long time. It was a lot of fun writing it. And now we're kind of, we're past the peak of promotion,
mm-hmm.
where I was on a plane, I think, every day.
Yeah.
For, I think, 2-3 weeks, something like that.
That's why I didn't know where you were yesterday. I was like,
yeah.
Are you leaving again? Or are you coming
know.
Back?
I am leaving tomorrow, actually. But we got to come in and, hold on a second. We got to have – last week was some downtime after it was all said and done. I did see one book on the beach, which was very exciting.
Oh, nice.
And then we just got to hang out at the beach all at Long Beach Island for a week, which was so nice. But, it, you know, when you work that much and you're traveling that much, your head is still kind of bouncing and busy. I think it would take 2 week vacation for me to feel like I was actually away.
Especially the Jersey Shore. It doesn't seem that relaxing to me.
No, sure you haven't been to Long Beach Island.
Yeah?
Yes, it's so chill. It is so mellow. It's very family. You just get up, you put your lotion on, you stumble down to the beach, and you just sit.
Oh, that's good.
Go. The water was amazingly warm for this time of year. Great sandbars. Everybody got to eat some good food and hang out. It was a very much a full summer thing. Great family. The kids got to hang out with all their cousins. It was definitely good. I know that the vacation did work at the end, because that bag next to you that has my whole career in it, my everything I've ever written, everything on my laptop, is the most important. I mean, that's, and I left without it.
Oh, nice.
I literally was like, my brain must have completely shut off. to leave that is like leaving my head behind. And thankfully, I got a call only 10 minutes out. Had a bit of a rush yesterday at the final stages to come back, where I had to get to JFK with a rental car and a family of six, because I brought my nephews out with me.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's how you know it was a good vacation, when you brought people back.
Yeah, I've got my two nephews here living the California life for the next week. And it was one of those very big dad moments of ran into traffic jam after traffic jam, left myself like 4 hours to get there.
Yeah.
And literally was, you know, you got to check your bags an hour before the latest.
Yeah.
And I am literally pulling up with 2 minutes to spare, dumping the bags, dumping the people, and then having to bring the rental car back and get back.
That's crazy.
It was a very big dad moment. I almost thought about just leaving the car on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And just calling them and saying, I'm sorry, I didn't make it. But the great people at Hertz, I pulled in, and after making a couple mistakes, even in that process, the guys said, as long as I gave him a good review online, he would give me a ride right back to the airport.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good thing that they do now.
I did not know they did that.
Yeah.
What a
you can
lifesaver.
Do it before, but sometimes, like, if you are running late, the dude will just be like, hey, we have somebody that can take
you. Yeah, a courtesy ride. Oh, my God. It was a lifesaver.
Yeah, and you know those guys want to get out of there, too. They're like,
totally.
You need to get out of the shop for a little bit.
And then I was in a situation of I have no cash on me. I'm tapped. It's the end. I'm limping across the finish line. I got no cash, not even a dollar. Just cards at this point. And this man's giving me a ride back. Now, you want to tip him? I have no tip money. But I am giving him a stellar review on Hertz.com, whatever that is, and with his name, and he's filling me in. And there was a beat at the end, like he thought that maybe the survey wasn't enough. I got that little vibe.
Oh, I thought you gave him a book. I thought that was
I wish I had one. I would have. No, I had nothing. So you probably, if you have it, you probably should tip in that moment.
Yeah, I think so.
Plus the thing. But, you know, sometimes you just don't got it.
Right.
And I tell them straight out, I have zero cash. I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, who cares? So, yeah. So it was a great book tour, a great little run.
And you went to New Orleans, too, right?
Dude, I was in New Orleans. The people there were dying. It was so humid.
Yeah.
And then I went to Washington, D.C., took my kids to D.C. for the first time.
Oh, cool.
And they got to see all of the monuments and all that great stuff. And we did the final Live From Here show, the former Prairie Home Companion, a couple weeks ago in Tanglewood. And I did my whole Out in America about D.C. And I have to say, it was a good season ender.
Yeah.
I should be posting these. What do you think I should do? I should post one a week?
Of the full show or
of
just
the monologue,
your Out in America
of my monologues?
Thing. Yeah, yeah. You could tag them on the end of the episode, or you can put it by itself.
Right. Oh,
like YouTube it?
Maybe? Yeah, I should do that. But that was all of my great fun show business stuff. And like I said, please buy the book and please leave a review. I want to see once this podcast ups, I want double reviews. Is that too much to ask?
Well, nobody does it for some reason. I don't know
why. It's a pain in the ass. You got to open the thing. Anytime you ask somebody to have to press more than one button,
yeah,
they get annoyed.
But I've done stuff on like iTunes that I think I've given a review, and then I've gone back and it's asking me to do it again. So I don't know how
yeah.
how good it
it's
is.
It's all a mess. I understand it's a pain in the ass, but you could write one review if I wrote 360 pages or whatever.
Yeah, right?
But this is all show business fluff. What Paul, what you did, holy Toledo. I'm out there just signing books and whining about not being in first class.
Yeah.
And you're in a war zone.
That's right.
How long were you gone?
It wasn't too bad. I think it was officially like a full... It ended up being 8 days.
Eight days.
Yeah.
From here to Iraq.
Well, yeah. Kuwait was like the kind of main airport where you can fly into, and we have like a presence there, and there's like a base called Ali Al Salim, which is an hour from Kuwait. And Kuwait is the hottest country on the planet.
On the planet?
Yes.
For real?
2016, it had the hottest temperatures on the planet.
Oh my God.
There's like a...
How hot?
There's like a little country just below, I forget what it's called, like a 5 or 6 letter name. But yeah, it's like 115. Gets between like 110 and 120.
Oh my God. Just constantly?
Yeah. And there's no... So, I mean, the good thing was, so when we flew into Kuwait, you know, it's 10 hours to Amsterdam and 6 hours to Kuwait. And Kuwait is very... It's not very Tom Popper friendly. Alcohol is illegal.
Oh.
If you distribute alcohol, you can be hanged or hung.
Hung?
Hanged.
Not even in the airport? Not even in the hotels?
Tom, no.
Because I went to Dubai.
Yes.
And same thing, illegal. They'll shoot you in the face if you have a drink.
Right.
Unless you go to the hotels that service foreign travelers. And in the basement of those hotels, they're allowed to sell alcohol.
Well, here's the thing. We were in a 5-star resort.
Ooh.
Like a beautiful, beautiful place.
How was the bed?
It was great. Everything automatic shades. You just hit the button.
Oh, that's my dream. I want that in my house.
And they had a doorbell on my room. And when the doorbell rang, not only would my TV come up with a camera of who was at the door,
ooh,
in the bathroom mirror, a screen like that's behind the mirror popped up that you could see who was at the door.
Wow. This is serious spy stuff. I bet a bunch of spies stay in those hotels.
Yeah, it was, but it was right on the beach. There was a private beach, these beautiful pools. They had like a giant tent for the World Cup that was air conditioned.
Ooh, nice.
But it's like there's no relief. It's 115 and there's no breeze coming off the ocean. It's just
nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing. And so it is just hot. There's no way around it. And people just don't go out during the day. There's, you know.
Yeah, you're living in a desert.
There's a lot of stuff that's open till like midnight or one because it's just, there's nothing to do.
So even in your five-star hotel, there's no booze in the basement?
No booze. Nothing. No, I'm trying to think. Well, the big thing is the hookah.
Mm-hmm.
They do love the hookah.
With all their flavored tobacco.
And the sheiks do love smoking. Like, as soon as those guys get outside, they just pull the cigarette right out.
Well, yeah, because they don't have anything else.
But yeah, it's and I guess here's the thing. I got to research a little bit more, but they said in the 60s, alcohol was legal. And it must have backfired so much that it's illegal. So it'd be interesting to figure out why. But driving is very. I think the speed limit is like 100 miles an hour or something. There's
even
no
on side streets.
There's no lanes on the highway.
Oh my god.
That's kind
no
of a
lanes
mess
on the highway.
Nope. So that part is kind of a mess.
But wait, you're staying in a five-star hotel and then going to the bases?
Just the first night, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The first night. But even like the Radisson is like $1,000 a night. There's no way around it. It's like,
because
Kuwait's all oil money, so everything's expensive. Everything's, you know, but people make a lot of money.
Right.
So, yeah, we have to drive to, you know, we stay at this nice hotel and then we have to drive to this base like an hour away, and that's where we get like your full metal jacket, your helmet, all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And dude, it is heavy. It is 75, 80 pounds easy.
Of gear.
Yeah. And you cannot, like, as a grown man in pretty good shape, like arm wise, to watch somebody, to see somebody carry two of those with ease is like very, very impressive. Like, we had one place where it was kind of like, it was called Embassy Air. It was kind of like a military commuter airline.
Right.
And it was like three of those, like, you know, mid-50s military dudes. And they were putting these gear bags through the metal detector. And we were going to help this guy. And he just grabbed two with each hand and just pulled them right through. And I was like, oh, that's man strength right there.
Wow.
That's.
Oh, man. So they give you like just a whole big duffel bag filled with it?
Yeah. So I got a duffel bag with a helmet. And your flak jacket, all that kind of stuff. So when you ride in the helicopters, you got to wear all that stuff.
Because people are shooting at you. Anyone shoot at you?
Well, there's no windows.
Right.
So we had a gun right on the side.
I saw your Instagram post of a guy shooting out of the thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
were you
just,
under attack?
No. We weren't under attack. They just have the gun ready, you know?
Right.
At all times. It's pretty crazy.
Did anyone try and kill Paul Morrissey while he was there?
I don't think so. Except for a bat did crap on my head during a show.
A bat?
Yeah.
Like a flying bat?
A flying bat twice.
Took a dump on you?
Yeah.
While you were doing your show?
While I was doing the show.
He wasn't a fan of comedy?
I guess not. He's used to having that pavilion by himself at 8 o'clock.
So how many shows you did? You did two shows?
Yeah, we did. There was, we were supposed to do, so Ali al-Salim is like the main thing in Kuwait, and a lot of people are there. There's a lot of like airplanes and all that kind of stuff, like storage. So there's, like we flew back with a bunch of guys from Denmark that were stationed there.
Uh-huh.
So like all countries from all over. So then you kind of go out from there. So where we were going was there was a Camp Taji, which was kind of outdoors. That was super hot. So all these places, like, you got to have – they're basically like those little kind of camp cabins with like two beds, like a dorm room, and then just you need an air conditioning like full blast all the time.
Oof.
And you got your shower shoes, you go to the shower in the bathroom, you can't use any of the water, so that's another what? Big thing is because it's so hot and because you can't, you know, if you drink the water, there's like all these organisms in it that your body isn't used to, so you get sick.
Ew.
So there is bottled water everywhere for free.
Right.
Even in the stores, they just have a refrigerator of free bottled water every place that you go inside, every street corner.
Wow.
Even if it's like steaming hot, there's just a big pile of bottled water. So that was cool. And that's a place that like you feel it. Like you're like, I'm getting dehydrated. I got to drink.
I need water.
Yeah. So I probably drank more water than I've drank in like a year just in that week.
Just to maintain.
Yeah.
What's crazy about that? Like my kids run around with water bottles, like mm-hmm. these metal water bottles. It's the big thing, you know, in LA, and it's starting to spread. You have to try and stop the giant island of plastic garbage in the oceans. And then you think about that, like there must be millions a day.
Yeah.
It's like, so how's my walking around with a little metal thing with my water in it?
Yeah.
It's like, is it a battle we could ever win?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is like, you know, just you can't even imagine like just being there without modern technology. Like even before air conditioning, how did you even?
Yeah.
It's insane.
I bet we probably wanted to go to war there earlier and couldn't because it was too hot. And then once the air was done, it was like, yeah, we might as well. Now we can do it. So wait, so you're in Kuwait.
Uh-huh.
And then where's the base that you're sleeping within your shower shoes?
Like an hour away. That's Ali al-Salim. We
and
spent a night there. That's still in Kuwait. And then we go to, you get in a, you know, the aircraft are a C-130, which is like kind of a, you know, just cargo net seats and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And the first flight that we did was, and Kuwait is hotter than Iraq. So that first flight took an hour to leave. So everyone's just in this, they call it the toaster, the C-130. So everyone's just sweating like crazy. They're handing out bottles of water like during the thing. I mean, these guys are like pros. That's the one thing that you do take away is like these guys are amazing. Like even the flight, there's like five pilots that they're all on it. They know what's going on.
They're all dialed in.
Yeah, it's because it's all dust. Like that's what one of the guys like. This is like the armpit of the world. It's just there's there's dust storms and it's 115 degrees and it's the desert. And to even fly in that kind of stuff, I mean, you really have to be on it. So
how many troops are there?
I don't know. I was trying to get a feel for it. I thought kind of, you know, I was guessing that most of these would be like main camps. Like mm-hmm. there's a place that we went to called Erbil, like Erbil.
Uh-huh.
And that had like a ton of coalition troops that was like it was part of Kurdistan. The Kurds were there. So basically what happened was ISIS was there.
Right.
And there's all these like skyscrapers, everything. They just immediately stopped building them and just left. So they like abandoned.
When ISIS came in?
Oh, yeah.
Or ISIS was building them?
When ISIS came in, everyone was just afraid and got out.
Right.
And so when the Americans came in and cleaned them out, like now they're starting to build again and they're like waiting to see like how long the Americans are going to stay. And all the coalition troops are there too. So like we went to a mall. There's a family mall,
uh-huh.
and you can't go as a single guy. Like, there has to be a woman with your group. Isn't that funny?
Really? Why? Because you could be
They don't
trouble?
Want any bachelors. No hanky-panky going on. And they don't want any...
Is it because a single man is more likely to blow stuff up?
Well, it's all about, like... No. It's all, like, just protecting, like, the females.
The social order.
Yeah.
So you just can't go in as a flirting man?
Because women aren't allowed to, you know, their eyes can only show when they're outside the house.
Right.
So it's like very, like even a man looking at them is kind of like offensive. Like I tried to not look into any of the women that were.
Did they tell you to do that?
In the garb. I wasn't told directly, but the guy was telling me like, that is the thing. There's just family malls that so there's not. It's not like your high school mall pickup place. You know
That's
what I mean?
Amazing.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's like that's how bad men really are. They're in their core, like they can't even be allowed to go. That's just wolves. They're just wolves. That's amazing. So your first one. So you did shows in both location.
The first one was Camp Taji, which was like. That one was like, we even, the place that they put us in, like, the air conditioning didn't work in, like, the first two, and they're like, we can't even have you here. Like, we have to find one that works, because you can't make it without it.
Jeez.
So, but, yeah, we met, there's a big platoon from New Orleans that they were there. It's a lot of National Guard people. Even when I posted something on Facebook, and a neighbor, one of the kids I grew up with, he was in the National Guard. He flies these C-130s. And
again, someone from your hometown.
Isn't that crazy?
Everywhere you go in the world, there's people from your school.
It's nuts, man.
It's so funny.
And he was like, hey, are you doing a show here? Blah, 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 that kind of stuff. And so this one was
crazy
actually
world.
Cool. But there was a coffee shop. It was called Green, something Green.
Uh-huh.
And everyone went there. Like, that was the big place everyone went.
Nice.
Everyone drank coffee. Everyone drank water.
I like that.
And then there was a place called The Reef, which was, like, the on-campus little dining thing. And, like, a couple guys like got Iraqi omelets and kebabs and all that kind of stuff.
What did you eat? What was your favorite thing to eat?
We had shawarma and kebabs, and there was a place that made this great naan bread.
Ooh,
it was so crazy.
So good.
They gave us like 8 baskets for like 4 people. They just kept like loading it up, and I was like, that never would happen.
Good stuff.
In the U.S.
Did they put za'atar on it?
What
spice? Like the?
They gave us a bunch of little. I didn't try it though.
Uh huh.
Yeah. It was like.
So they just gave you the flat naan bread. Puffy,
well, but it was like toasted though, and it seemed to like not last very long either. Like it was warm and like super fresh, and then even by the time we were done eating, it seemed like it was getting kind of like crispy.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah. So and then we ate at the DFAC is like the army kind of cafeteria. So the one in Erbil was awesome. Like they even had like. It's funny, they had, like, you know, how your dining hall would do, like, Italian Day or something.
Yeah.
Like, they had their little pasta corner, but there's, like, Italian troops there.
Right, right.
So I'm like, I wonder if these guys are, like, offended or if they actually eat there. but they got,
so
you know, Fruit Loops, Pop-Tarts, all that grab-and-go stuff.
God.
It's really funny how much stuff they actually have.
Are you smuggling snacks back to your bunk?
Well, they tell you, like, they had a bunch of Gatorade packets that you could bring.
Yeah.
What else did I bring? Like, they had Pop-Tarts. I tried to pack well. I actually packed pretty well.
Yeah.
Because basically, I had, like, a duffel bag and, like, a big backpack that was just packed with everything that I could think of that need. And, I did pretty well. I probably overpacked a little bit with clothes, but like you needed a towel. Like one time they didn't have towels; they just had linen, so that was good. Shower shoes because you had to like walk to the bathrooms and stuff like that.
Right. Do you have to poop in a hole in the ground?
No. They had like a regular bathroom. It was just like camp, you know. They had like showers in the bathrooms and stuff like that together.
Did you hook up with a hot soldier lady?
No. They were like, that was also very impressive. Like, every woman there was like I said, those things are 80 pounds, and they're all carrying those and walking around. And, like, not that I didn't have, like, respect for or expect that women could do it, but it was like, wow, this is pretty crazy that they're doing everything that the guys are, you know?
So did that make them seem sexier to you?
It was very, it was very, like, it was very uniform. Like, everyone just seemed, like, asexual, kind of, you know? Like, that was the other, like, porn sites are blocked by the government. There's no alcohol. It's, like, very, like, monk living.
Even for our soldiers.
Yeah.
Wow. That's good.
And then,
So then now, what's the vibe there now? ISIS has been driven out.
Well, that's what Erbil is way north, and that's kind of the closest thing to, like, Syria. Like, basically, ISIS got kicked out of Erbil.
Uh-huh.
And the Kurds are there, which are more... they're not as religious, so they're kind of more westernized.
Mm-hmm.
And they like having the Americans there because they feel like if we leave, then they just
will come back.
Yeah. And so...
So they kicked ISIS out.
Yeah.
I was reading a thing yesterday that ISIS is really diminished and stuff, but it's... The threat is of terrorism is even higher now because they're just everything's so fractured and they're kind of all over the place. But that base of ISIS is gone.
Well, like Syria has that Assad guy who's kind of like
big troublemaker.
Yeah, but he's on our side as far as ISIS. So basically, like Assad, the Russians, and us, all the coalition people, are all fighting ISIS, and we're pushing them up. Like, to Syria, almost to, like, Turkey, and they're in this little small place now.
Right.
So, that's the only thing that everyone's looking to is, like, well, what happens when we wipe them out? Who takes control? Do we leave and the Russians start taking control? Or does
Iran.
Assad do something crazy? Or
so, we're on Assad's side, getting rid of ISIS,
yeah.
But then we're supporting the revolutionaries who are trying to take Assad out.
I guess they don't publicize that part as much. It's more about just let's fight ISIS first and worry about the rest of the stuff. But it's kind of getting to that time where they're going to have to worry about the rest of it. But it's like, you know, Erbil was like tons of Canadians came to the show. There was a bunch of British dudes, Denmark, Belgium, Germany. Like everybody was there.
Everybody's there.
And that's why
isn't it crazy that there's this... one group that just has get the whole world. I guess that's the way it always goes, right?
Yeah. Well, it made me feel good, though, because, you know, like, when you see stuff on the news or see, like, if the president, you know, criticizes this country or that country, it's like, well, they're all eating in the same cafeteria right now.
Right.
Like, there was two girls that just came from Australia to this Camp Taji place.
Uh-huh.
And they came to the show, and they're like, oh, yeah, we just got here, and... So it's like, wow, this is like really a world kind of universal thing. So
yeah.
It kind of make you feel better about that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we went to that place, and then Erbil was like the northernmost place, and that's where we almost kind of got stuck.
Right.
So we did a show like in a nice cafe, and we were there for the 4th of July. They did fireworks for the first time.
Oh, nice.
They had like sparkling grape juice.
Hot dogs?
Yeah, they definitely have hot dogs.
That's good.
There was an arm wrestling.
I wouldn't go if there were no hot dogs.
There was an arm wrestling tournament.
These dudes
were beast, man. These guys, yeah. It was like, they had like a guy who was the champ, and these guys were coming out of the wood. They're some big dudes, man.
Did he defend his title?
The guy ended up winning. I don't know how. But there was a couple dudes. They all looked like NFL linemen, you know.
Jeez.
Just huge arms. And
just jacked.
Yeah, it was great. And the Atlanta Falcons were just there, too.
Which was
kind of cool. Like, the coach and the CEO and a couple cheerleaders and the kicker.
Wow.
So that was kind of impressive that they would go, because that's not easy to get there. So
do you get a feeling, like, that that morale is... What's morale like there?
I think it's just... It's tough in general just to be there. Like,
yeah.
I think they feel like they're doing... good, obviously, because like even that place wouldn't exist like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, now they're building more buildings and it seems like it's going to be a more permanent thing.
Yeah.
But most of these guys, like especially in the Kuwait base, like these are all guys, even the guy from my neighborhood, he's like a National Guard guy.
Right.
You know, he's not a young kid. So he gets pulled back to do 60, 90 days,
right,
and then go back to his regular life. So I'm sure it's not...
So they'll probably just build permanent bases there, and we'll just always have some kind of a presence.
Here's a funny thing is... when we get to the airport, right, they're unloading us, and it's not really an airport. It's just like... It's just all dudes with machine guns. Like,
right.
You just feel... You've never felt less manly than, like... getting off a plane with, like, a duffel bag. And, like, you know, there's just all dudes with, like, knives and machine guns and everything.
Hardcore.
And so everyone's just getting there. We're getting the briefing that all the soldiers are getting, you know.
Right.
Like, here's this. Here's the threat. Here's what you do with your weapons. This, you can do this, this, and that. And then the stuff like this always sticks in my head, but they said, and one last thing, you know, there's a few stores and they're like, amazing massage, formerly natural health center. You're not allowed to go there. It's basically like a happy ending place.
Oh, really?
And so they're like, no personnel is allowed at amazing massage, formerly known as natural health center, even though it's under new management, still
isn't
same place.
Funny?
And
no matter how much it's cleaned up and so strict and all the rest of it, still the happy massage place still finds a way.
Yeah.
To stay in business.
So we do the show and, you know, the other comedians go and then I'm closing the show and like the colonel and everybody's there and you know, it's a really fun night. And so I kind of took a risk and I was just like, hey, I just want to thank everybody here for having us, the colonel, everyone, and especially want to thank the people at Amazing Massage, formerly the Natural Health Center. They're under new management. I don't know if you guys know, but it's just they really took care of us today. And like the place just exploded.
Oh,
it was
really?
Like hilarious, yeah, because everyone heard about it, and it's like the inside joke.
That's great.
And they appreciate like how this guy know he's been here for like a day.
That's awesome.
So that was pretty funny.
That's great. Well, that's good, Paul. Good job. We thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, it was. I'd never done anything like that, so that was, you know, I was with people that had already done it, so that was a good thing. But yeah, Black Hawk helicopters and the flak jacket, walking around with 80 pounds on you and the helmet.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So cool. All right, I'm going to press pause for 1 second because I have to turn the oven on because I haven't baked in a month.
Okay.
And the first breads are about to go in.
All right.
So I'm just going to press pause for 1 second. And we're back. Sorry about that. I created the dough last night, or created the, fed the starter, got the poolish going. And I have my nephews here. Everything's, it's just like, I'm very excited. There's
well, the bread's paying the bills now. That's what it's, it takes.
The bread is important. It's damn important.
This isn't a hobby day anymore. A hobby.
Man, it's... I was dusty. I was rusty, though. I came home and I was like looking in the book. I'm like, what do you do again? How do you do this again? I was out of practice. It's been a month since I made a damn loaf of bread.
Crazy. Did you miss it?
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
There's nothing better. I mean, as much as we travel and enjoy it, there's nothing better than those days when I know I've got a whole week to bake bread and write. Because it's, you know, that balance of in the morning of just coming in, getting the dough ready, and then knowing you have to tend to it about every hour. And in between those hours, you're writing.
Yeah.
With your coffee in the office and then go back to the bread. That is a good day.
That's your regular schedule.
Love that schedule.
Yeah.
Has not happened in months. I have not been in this place for 3 days in a row in over 2 months.
Oh, yeah?
My own home.
That's crazy.
I'm just out there sending checks back.
Did they rent out your room? Did they keep it?
I did see another dude's Crocs.
Airbnb your office?
I figure if she's sleeping with someone who's got Crocs on, I can't fight that. I have to say, Paul, and I'm going to warn you because we're about halfway into the podcast. More than two people said that you were wrong and that we have to keep the joke segment going on the podcast.
I didn't say anything either way.
Well, according to them, they say you're poo-pooing the joke segment.
No, it just gets sprung on me. I don't feel like I do enough homework to...
well, that's why I'm giving you a little warning before we get to the end of the show that there will be some jokes told, some horrible jokes told before the end of this podcast.
Yeah, that. Well, the one thing I was going to tell you, have you gotten better at flying and airport stuff, or does it get worse the more that you do it?
Better as far as my attitude or my skill?
Just in general. I mean, I was getting really stressed out about just like all the airport BS and like seats and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then just flying this way a few times, I was like, well, this is going to be easy now that I can just, fly a commercial.
Yeah.
It'd be no problem.
With no flak
jacket
on.
You know, and then I do a 10-hour flight and it's still, I mean, people are just
hellish
on top of each other. It's just, there's no way to travel.
It's rough. It's definitely rough. If I can, I have to say though, my skill level is high. My skill of getting through security,
mm-hmm.
timing of things, all of that is I'm in prime time. So I'm able to make travel easier. I'm able to book on the flights. Like if I'm in coach, I know I want to be in the front seat,
yeah,
on the aisle. That's a big relief. All of that stuff, whatever advantage I can take advantage of, I am, and it's become okay. And yesterday we were flying back from New York with the whole family, so we had a whole row and a half. That was nice because you're not concerned about the people next. Like there's no strange smelling people next to you. That made a huge
difference. You got a crew. You got a posse.
So maybe you should travel with a posse.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
If you could travel with a posse, I could see it being pretty great. But we do this too often.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get into a space of dreading it. Otherwise, you won't be able to function.
Well, my thing was, you know, obviously, when you're in Iraq, you're kind of on their time anyway. So it's that part was fine, but it was just, there was so much hurry up and wait at the regular airports. Actually, that was one of the funny things too. Is we went to, when we get to Kuwait, it's very like you get the sense that you're the stupid Americans. You know what I mean? Everyone's in these robes and looking very official.
Yeah.
And so we get there, and we had to buy visas. We had to get our fingerprints, all that kind of stuff. So these guys are all very serious and seem to not like us very much. And everyone's doing the fingerprints. And one of the things, you got to do all four fingers.
Uh-huh.
So after like the fourth guy goes through, the guy just, the official guy just kind of like waves the four fingers like this.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one guy with us, Alex Elkin, who weighs, I don't want to oversell him, he's close to 3 bills.
Wow.
And he's got meatloaf hair and he's got leather wristbands on. He looks like some kind of a cartoon character. And he doesn't see anything going. It was almost like Chris Farley coming through.
Yeah.
And the guy waves the four fingers at him, and he's very like nervous and just stands and then just waves back at him like this. And all three guys behind the counter, they start dying laughing. Like, I've never seen people laugh so hard. And so that kind of like got the room relaxed a little bit. So that was really funny.
You know, there was a great book, autobiography by Bob Hope, called Have Tucks Will Travel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was the king of USO.
Yeah.
And I read it pretty early on in my career, and it really kind of, it's kind of like an example of what you're talking about. Like, his perspective on traveling and flying and fear of flying and all that was so diminished because he traveled so much with the military and to these crazy places.
Yeah.
That it really made you realize, because he did it so much, air travel wasn't so precious, mm-hmm. and it wasn't a big deal, and it wasn't like he had to, you know, I'm sure, you know, him. He has an airport named after him.
Right.
And there was a time when, you know, you're Bob Hope, I'm sure he was traveling in a sweet way when he was going commercial, whatever. But his attitude was just like, throw me in the back of a cargo thing, throw me into this. He's had all these near-death experiences on these flights and stuff, and it was just like, it wasn't a big deal in his mind. It was just, there's a gig, I got to get to the gig, whatever I got to do to get to the gig.
Yeah.
And that, I carry that example in my head a lot.
Right.
Like, tomorrow I've got to go to Tahoe for one night for one show and then right back. And my little petulant, spoiled head is like, I know when I get down to the airport, it's going to be that LAX is ruined right now because of Uber and Lyft.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You can't get around the horse. You can't, once you get to the terminal, you can get there in like 20 minutes, and then it's going to take you an hour to get around the horseshoe to get dropped off at your thing.
Right.
All the drivers are freaked out. They don't know what to do. They're all trying to find different ways. It's a point of stress for sure. And that is the only, like, if I could clean that part out of my head, I'd be okay.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not even going to pack until tomorrow. I'll just got to go and do the Bob Hope approach and just go do it. But then there's like a little party that knows what part's going to be a pain in the ass.
Right.
And for the whole day before, I carried around in my head like, oh, how are we going to get through that?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get better at. Because obviously, you know, especially going over there, it was so great to, you know, you meet everybody and they're always like, you know, I'm from, you know, this town in, I'm trying to think of like some place that we've been to recently, but they all think that like, oh, you won't know what this is. It's like, oh no, we were just there at this place. We ate at this restaurant. And like, oh man, that's crazy. You know that. And it's so cool to like connect with all those people there. Yeah. And everyone was so nice. So to complain about any of that stuff, because they're also working the whole day. Like, I'm just going there to do a show, and I'm stressed out just getting place to place without even have to worry about getting shot at or anything, you know?
Yeah, that's the, yeah, exactly. But, you know, we all have our thing, and it's like, you know, you're doing a big thing. You're traveling all these time zones. You're not trained. You're not. You're in worse shape than they are, physically, mentally. You know, it's like, it is a big deal, you know. Yeah, but you're right. A lot of life is perspective. And it's like, all right, you see what these people are going through. I'm fine. You know what I mean? I mean, even like, even yesterday flying with the family, it's like, I'm in coach. I'm going to be, you know, I've traveled so, so much that if I can, like I said, if I can make it easier, great. And then you get this thing in your head like, I can't be in coach. Oh my God, I'm going to be in coach. And then you're in coach. It's like, it's fine. It's just fine. It's almost like you get caught in this illusion of like, it's almost like it's the airline's fault for selling you this idea of what flying can be, and it never can be.
Right.
Right?
It is all expectations, though. Like, when we fly Southwest, you have no expectation. But
none.
If you see the seat map and you're like, oh, I'm first up for first class, and like the place is empty, then you're like, this is going to be a breeze. And then when you get there and it's mayhem, that's what throws you off.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I mean, that's a really good example. When I fly Southwest, it's like I'm taking the bus.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be on the bus. And I don't know, understand why people shit on Southwest, because I'm like, it's fine. You just go get in your lines. It's kind of works. You just get your thing. As long as you're in the A group, you're good.
Yeah.
Who cares? What are you expecting? It's Southwest. It's really true.
Yeah.
And then you take a flight from LA to New York and you're like, why aren't I in business class? And I was first on the list, and now I'm here and I'm fourth on the list because three people with more miles have knocked my ass down.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, we're all spoiled.
Well, I will say this, though, because the international thing is all about lounges. There's more lounges than gates in the international terminal, which I didn't even know about. And one of the guys has, like, you know, some crazy American Express card. So he's like, I can get everybody in. So we spent, like, 40 minutes in this place just sitting there drinking whatever we wanted and just relaxing. And
big
it
difference.
Did so much just for, especially if you're going to fly 10 hours, you know?
A big difference. When you hustle and you get to the airport early and now there's not one seat for you at the gate.
Yeah.
And you're going to be stuck with all these people just acting inappropriately. If you can get into that lounge and just sit there with an actual coffee cup.
Yeah.
It changes everything.
$19 for a turkey sandwich.
Yeah. It's basically saying you're not getting raped for an hour. If you can just be there and be in a safe space, you're in good shape. Yeah. But, you know, it's also right now summer travel.
Yeah.
All the families are out. Nobody travels more than once a year. They don't know what's going on.
Right. This reminded me of, the flight going to, from Amsterdam to Kuwait, 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I end up sitting next to this kid who might be like 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
So the flight attendant's talking to him. And then I'm like, oh, so where are you from? And he's like, oh, I live in San Clemente, you know, which is like south of L.A. And like, we picked up my sister, but then we missed our flight. Now my parents, like, we have to go. And I was like, oh, so you... Like, so you're, do you know where you're going? And like, oh, I'm not really sure. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
This kid's on the flight for 6 hours. And I find out his parents were on the flight. They just were on another part of the plane for 6 hours. Never checked on this kid. Never said, would that ever happen to you?
No.
Just like, you're on your own, kid.
My buddy came back from a trip and he said the whole trip was great. The one thing, because they had a long flight, he would have paid a little more money to have... he would have paid for economy plus and given up his business class and upgraded his kids, met basically in the middle in economy plus.
Right.
So they could all be together for the flight.
Uh-huh.
And I get that, because the flight is a big part of the thing.
Yeah.
And, like, to have your kids be in another part and just not be with them is kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, we're the three comedians. We're not sitting together, and we're all getting up and saying hello to each other.
Right.
And his parents didn't come there once.
Yeah. But I always wonder about that. Like, I know people, like, get sent to boarding school when they're in, like, sixth grade.
And yeah.
They're just treated like adults, like, a super early age. And you just got to go off and do... Like, there was a guy I met doing this gig, and I met the guy's father, who left home in Brooklyn when he was 13 and never came back. He just
really?
Went down to New Orleans and 13, got a job. It sounds so crazy now. But you kind of can do it.
Yeah.
It's like, why not make them into little grown-ups right away, you know?
Well, it's like your job is to prepare them, so I guess you kind of decide at which age they're going to be able to do that.
My nephew is with me right now. He's like 22.
Yeah.
And he doesn't fly. I think the last time he flew was when he was 10 with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he was meeting us at the airport, and the whole family was freaked out. How is he going to get through? How's he going to know what to... He has an ID.
Yeah.
I'm like, at one point, I'm like, wait a minute. He's a man.
Right.
He'll figure it out.
Can't
Everybody
baby him.
Everybody stop texting him and let him get his ass to the gate. He's going to know what to do.
Right.
And if he doesn't, he'll learn it and figure it out and go to... You know what I mean? You could do that at 8.
Yeah. And then the second flight, there's like this kid who played the cello... The school played in like some orchestra in Italy,
mm-hmm.
and he plays the cello. He's in ninth grade, and his mom was all freaked out because they weren't sitting together.
Right,
and he's like, "You need your jacket, need this, need that." Yeah. He's just kind of like, "Come on, mom,
right, leave me alone."
And you know, the cart comes through, and that was the great thing is when you get to Amsterdam, that's Heineken country. That's what actually the flight. We're leaving from Kuwait, and there was two soldiers from Denmark that were sitting next to me.
Yeah.
And they'd been in this camp that's, you know, really tough to go through. And they're like, yeah, they haven't drank in a month or something like that. And they're like, as soon as we get to Amsterdam, they have the Heineken bar at the Amsterdam airport. I'm going to have like 20 of those. And then on the airline, they got free wine and Heineken. So
nice.
He grabbed a wine, and he's like, yeah, I need wine. It was like breakfast.
I did a thing yesterday where I never really drink on planes, unless I'm really like, have finished something and am really just in a party mood. I normally don't, because it just dehydrates the hell out of you.
Yeah, especially a long flight, and you're like hung over in the middle.
I know, right, exactly. And I got two gin and tonics. It just sounded so refreshing after driving 3 hours to the airport and dropping the rental car, and I was just like, I wasn't stressed. I just felt like this. I deserve this summer beverage.
Right.
I deserve to drink a gin and tonic like an old waspy gentleman on the plane. And I had two of them. About an hour later, I decided I'm going to take a little nap. I all of a sudden kind of like get woken up by myself.
Uh-huh.
Felt like crap. I was sweating.
Got the sweats.
I was nauseous. I was like... spotty vision. I was like, stupid ass gin and tonics. If I just had the waters, I would have had a nice nap.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for me.
I've never been. I had like a Heineken, but they were like, you know, it's like those 8 ounce cans or something.
Yeah.
So it was just more of like, actually, we did your thing at the end of the trip. We got there. We had like a nice dinner. And at one of the places, Lang, the female comedian, bought like 3 Cohibas. They had like a big pack.
Nice.
So even though it was 115 degrees, we had like this end of the week cigar.
Nice.
At this, right on the beach, right before we were going to leave halfway through the world.
Was it as good as it sounds?
It was fun. It was like a good ending moment too, like an official ending, because everything else is so crazy. Like even at the end, it's like I got my Uber's here already. I got to go upstairs, and you know, it just gets nuts.
Yeah. That's a great moment. That's when a cigar really makes sense.
Yeah, like we did that one with Bill Burr. Like we did it at midnight on the last day of Montreal.
Yeah,
everyone's
show's
like,
over.
Yeah.
We're all done. We've done a good job. Get a reward like a man. All right, Paul. You know, as comedians, a lot of times when we travel around, people always want to hear jokes.
They never say that
they
to me, Tom.
Always say, you're a comedian, tell me a joke. And you normally don't tell them a joke, and then they tell you a joke, and it's awful. And there's a reason we don't carry these jokes around in our heads, because they're terrible. And we, as comedians, hopefully craft better material than what...
And most importantly, we don't say them on stage either.
No, but we do say them here on the podcast. The Come to Papa podcast, your favorite podcast among all the other podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. It's always a nice thing that you let us into your life during the week. And we're going to ruin it by telling you some funny jokes that aren't funny.
It's amazing how many people have the same bad jokes. You would think that, like, if a joke is bad, people stop telling it. But it just seems that people spread it more the worse that it is. Like, every one of these websites has the same 10 horrible jokes.
I know I've said it before, but I'm going to give Jay Leno a call. Because that man loves hearing and telling jokes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they circle through. They were, you know, they, rather than the internet, just spoken word, person to person, a joke will come up and it'll be like hot for a little bit and then it falls out and some other joke takes its place. And Leno always had his pulse on the jokes. I'm going to write it down on my little to-do list. I think I still have his number. Okay. You want to start?
I think you should start because I didn't do my homework.
Some of these are dirty, some of them aren't. I apologize in advance.
Okay.
Why was the guitar teacher arrested?
I don't know.
For fingering a minor.
Hey.
Minor chord, Paul.
Oh, I see.
Minor chord. What's the difference between a tire and a 300? What's the difference between a tire and 365 used condoms?
I don't know.
One's a good year. The other's a great year.
You should call Jackie the joke man. Isn't he the guy that has the jokes?
Why does Santa Claus have such a big sack?
I don't know.
He only comes once a year.
Hey, these seem borderline sexual harassment for Tom Papa's family.
I'm sorry.
What movie do atheists watch for Christmas? Coincidence on 34th Street.
Oof. Oof. Keep going.
I'm still scanning. That's the funny thing is, like, there's so many of these joke sites, and these jokes are so bad.
This isn't bad, and this is a good one because you're in the military now. We okay. thank you for your service. Where does the general keep his armies?
I don't know.
In his sleeveys. Get it? His armies.
You know,
in his sleeveys.
When when I was coming back through customs yesterday, I said, you know, what were you doing? I was like, I was in Iraq, and they're like, thank you for your service. I was like, no, I'm just a comedian. I was just doing shows for the USO. He's like, where were you? And I'm like, Camp Taji. And they're like, oh, yeah, I was there. So, like, uh-huh. It gives you some street cred with the TSA and the security.
Yeah, are you allowed to board early now?
I hope so.
They should give you a card, like a what was that, PBA card?
Something like
that. A bear walks into a restaurant and says, I want a grilled cheese. The waiter says, what's with the paws? The bear replies, what do you mean? I'm a bear.
Oh, that's bad. It's also, the worse the joke is, the longer it is.
Yeah, that's short is better. Be. Definitely. What did the Buddhist ask the hot dog vendor?
I don't know.
Make me one with everything. You don't like those as much as the dirty ones.
No, I just...
What does one saggy boob say to the other saggy boob?
Lighten up.
If we don't get some support, people will think we're nuts. That's funny.
We should end on that one.
I like this one.
It feels like we should have gotten better at this, but we're just getting worse.
It's not us. We're not responsible. We're just reporting what's out there.
No, but we're searching for jokes, and the more we search, the less funny we find them.
Come on. These were some good ones. That boob one was great. Let me see. I don't want to be too dirty.
Yeah. What about the hasn't come back about the no arms and no legs thing?
What?
Remember your jokes about the guys
with
no arms,
guy with
no
arms,
arms
and no legs on a doorstep?
I don't know.
Matt. What do you call a guy with no arms and no legs in a pile of leaves?
I don't know.
Russell. What do you call a guy with no arms and no legs in the ocean? Bob. What do you call a girl with one leg?
Eileen.
What do you call an Asian girl with... What do you call a Chinese girl with one leg?
I think we should end the podcast now. By the way, that's a... interesting one, because now that I know, okay, do you know what that term is, basket case? Do you know where it comes from?
A basket case?
Yeah, like
no.
We call some, you know how we
they're
we
crazy,
use,
right?
We use it as like a funny, oh, that guy's a basket case.
Yeah.
It came from, I think it was World War II, for people who lost all their limbs, they had to carry them in a basket, like a soldier that
oh.
lost. So that's when they say someone's a basket case. It's like...
He's a real basket case.
Yeah, there's like...
Because he's been ripped apart by war.
Yeah, and it's like one of the worst case. So oof. That's why I don't know how it turned into being like a funny thing that we'd say like, oh, she's a real basket case.
Oh, boy.
It's like, wow.
It's better not to learn these things.
Yes. But we turned it into something funny somehow. I don't know how. Just like you're... But do you want to finish the Asian joke, or did you think you're going to lose your book deal? But also your buddy Bennington, Ron Bennington, does like a street joke show now. You should ask him.
He does?
I think so. When does your thing airing yet, the Unmasked?
Yes, it aired. How did the blonde die ice fishing?
I don't know.
How did the blonde die while ice fishing? She was hit by the Zamboni. How does NASA organize a party?
I don't know.
They plan it. All right, here's a knock-knock one. I haven't seen the ending, so I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Two.
Two who?
It's to whom. Oh, that's a bad one.
There's the interrupting cow one. They're all the same.
They're not all the same. We've had some good ones today.
Why is 6 afraid of 7? Because 7, 8, 9. See, they're all the same. I think it's the generation. You have to ask.
How do you make your girlfriend scream during sex?
I don't know.
Call and tell her about it.
We have your next book. Are you hoping that this is going to catch on and then they'll want Tom, like the bread thing happened too easily?
Tell you know who I was competing with my book? The guy who was just stuck up there at number one. Some like the greatest dad jokes ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In the parenting humor section. It was, yeah.
So maybe this catches on and they want Tom Papa's dad jokes. You volume two.
That's all that guy did, I'm sure. Just
yeah.
Went on the internet, researched a bunch of them, and put them out there. Good title. Nimrod. How do you circumcise a hillbilly?
I don't know.
Kick his sister in the jaw.
What?
Oh, because she's doing something to him. Oof. That's bad. I'm going to end on a clean one. You ready?
Okay.
What's red and smells like blue paint?
Red and smells like blue paint. I don't know.
Red paint. That's a good one. That's a doozy. All right. We thank you all for listening. We thank you all for tuning in again. Go to TomPapa.com. Look up all of the great events coming up. I'll be in Massachusetts, Montreal, a whole week of Montreal shows. Nothing in Ireland, which is our favorite country. Our biggest listenership outside of this country. We have to book something in Ireland.
Yeah, we got
to
get there.
Buy the book, Your Dad Stole My Rake and Other Family Dilemmas. If you haven't bought the book, or if you have bought the book, even if you haven't, go on Amazon and please write a review for me. It would be very helpful to keep the ball rolling on what has already been a successful run. Go to paulasawebsite.com. Look up Paul's new special. Look up his fancy stuff. We're all over the place. We're doing everything we can. You're our favorites. Enjoy your life.